Welcome to Trillions. I'm Joel Weber.
And I'm Eric Balchunas.
Eric, we took a field trip to Pennsylvania recently, you know, your home state.
Yeah, not really that far a field trip for me. I live in Philly, so it was almost like a home game.
I took That's a field trip. Early train out of Penn Station.
Although anytime you go on the Schuylkill, it is an adventure.
What's the Schuylkill?
It's that road 76 that goes from Philly
right
out to Valley
like
Forge.
Like worst traffic in the country.
Second worst highway after the one in L.A. In the country. Yeah, I think it should be renamed the Dake Hill.
So we did that because at the other end of that journey is a living legend at Vanguard named Jack Bogle.
That's right. And the reason we went out to see him, not only are we trying to interview, you know, experts in the industry now and then, but in this case, we were interviewing him for a special series we have coming out called Trillions Presents, which is sort of like a Ken Burns-style documentary on the story of the ETF, a six-part series. And Bogle is part of that story. So we wanted to interview him for this special series. And while we were interviewing him, it lasted about an hour and 10 minutes.
We just exhausted him. He was so over us.
He was. At the end, I could tell he just wanted us to leave.
Like, go away.
Yeah, yeah. But
amazing guy, though.
Totally. And there were so many things that came out of his mouth that weren't exactly applicable to the story of the ETF, but were just little nuggets that I thought we should not just let sit on this file.
Absolutely. Every word that was coming out of his mouth, you're just hanging on it because he is so astute still. I mean, he's right there. He is sharp.
He's like the Ben Franklin of the financial world. He's not only talking logic and he's built the, you know, second biggest asset manager, but he's just little nuggets of wisdom just sort of come out.
And I mean, basically almost every American can basically chalk up their retirement to Jack Bogle.
Yeah, even Buffett says this guy is the one they should build statue of. He will definitely make the history book. So it's literally a legend. But beyond Bogle's place in history, he's also sitting there in the Bogle Research Center. So what he does is similar to what I do. And he studies funds. So he's got a lot of good opinions on what's going on right now. And
right,
that's part of what
he was the founder of Vanguard. And now they've kind of moved into this other capacity where he's more of an advisor.
Yeah, he writes books and does research. So in a way, he and I have a very similar job and track the same stuff.
That's generous.
Yeah.
On this episode of Trillions, getting mutualized with Jack Bogle. Okay, why are we calling this getting mutualized?
Because when we sat down with him, he was in the middle of writing his latest book, and he was going through a chapter he wrote over the weekend. We saw him on a Monday.
And this latest book is an upcoming book.
Yeah, it's not even out yet. So he was sharing what he was writing. So we kind of got a little bit of a
scoop. He spent the weekend writing. Like, the whole weekend he said he wrote.
Yeah, he said he naps a lot, which is understandable, but and I like to nap.
Sounds like a good life. Right, nap.
Yeah. And one of the things that stuck out to me about what this chapter he was writing about, everybody thinks the industry is going to consolidate because everybody wants low-cost products. And, you know, there's
just
not
going to be one of your favorite things to talk about.
Right. And so in the end, you know, going to see a lot of companies get together to get scale and go cheaper. He's gone beyond that. He thinks they're going to actually mutualize, which means they're going to—
Yeah, what does that mean?
That means that Vanguard is a mutual ownership structure. They're
that's
literally
what makes it so different than anybody else.
Absolutely. It means that the fund investors are the shareholders. He thinks more and more companies will be forced to do this in order to compete.
Radical.
Yeah. It's
like a Bernie Sanders moment.
Totally. So let's play the clip.
In my book, I am telling you, the world, that in the coming era, there will be mass mutualization of the large firms in the business. Firms will mutualize. There are a whole lot of reasons. One is there's a competitor out there that's eating their lunch, and they know perfectly well why he's eating their lunch. And so far, they have not wanted to, you know, get competitive again. They'd have to slash their fees, but they could never slash them enough to get down to where mutual can do.
So he's not talking about ETFs there, right? He's talking, it's bigger than that.
Bigger than that. And this is obviously a little out of our normal purview here, but this is something that I've been focused on a lot. If everybody wants their funds for dirt cheap and Vanguard's taking in about 2/3 of all the money, and the reason Vanguard is because they're so cheap and they've been lowering their fees for 30, 40 years. What's going to happen to this industry? And he's basically saying this is what's going to happen.
Right.
And
so,
this, by the way,
is an industry level phenomenon.
He answered the question that we first asked him that this was the answer of was why does he think other firms haven't done Vanguard's mutual ownership structure as opposed to being sort of a for-profit company? And that was his answer was that Well, they haven't because they haven't had to, but now they're probably going to have to.
Right. Radical.
Very radical, because it's a completely different way of operating. And that is going to mean a lot of lower revenues for these companies. But what's crazy about what he says is, when you think of consolidation, you think, okay, if you consolidate with three or four companies, get your assets to a couple trillion, you have so much in assets, you could lower your fees to Vanguardian levels. He's basically saying that's not going to be enough.
Right. Wild.
Jack Bogle has a way of delivering savagery, but in a folksy manner. And that was classic Bogle.
You, yeah. Your juggler is on the ground.
Yeah. But you're like, oh, it sounded so grandfatherly.
We also asked him about what the timeline would be like for this, which he said he doesn't really think about it that way. It's just going to happen. It could be 5 years, it could be 10 years, it could be two decades, but it will happen. He thinks it's an eventuality. Okay, next one. We buried the lead on this one.
Yeah. So we're on an ETF show here, so we had to ask about ETFs. Now, Bogle has famously not exactly been a fan of ETFs.
The world knows where he stands on this one. He is not a fan.
His famous quote was that ETFs are like handing an arsonist a match.
Except that he may have one-upped it in his interview with us.
Yeah. All right, let's play this clip.
Well, an ETF is just another form of index fund. A sort of bastardized form, for the want of a better word.
For want of a better word.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty blunt.
Cut to the chase. That's how he feels. But why does he feel that way?
Here's why. The ETF was really designed, and this goes back to our documentary, to increase volume on the Amex. It was created by people at an exchange who wanted to see volume. He hates
volume. Who would benefit
volume.
From the volume.
Totally.
Right?
And he hates volume. He thinks your holding period should be like 100 years.
Right. So this is a trading tool, conceived of as a trading tool.
Yes.
And he is not a trader. He's a long-term investor.
And what I think hurts him is that he created the index fund or made it into the big success it is. And this is sort of a mutation of it. So it kind of gets credit for the rise of passive, but in no way is it passive investing. So he does think that it may have contaminated this.
Well, it can be used for passive investing.
And it can be. And we challenged him with the fact that, yes, some ETFs are traded a lot by a lot of big investors, and that those volume figures can overshadow the people who are buying and holding. And he admitted that. There's no way to separate out the volume. And when you press Bogle on ETFs as being a fine vehicle if you buy and hold, he will admit that. He just thinks not many people are.
Yeah, he did concede it. Yeah.
And let's play that clip.
Absolutely. My statement about that may seem kind of cynical, but exchange-traded funds are fine just so long as you don't trade them. And that's not quite a true statement, because you should stay with the Class A ones, the broadly diversified ones, the total stock market, the S&P, total international, total bond, or total balance is even easier. You only have to stay with one. So, yes, there's a...
So that's interesting. He actually does acknowledge that it's okay. You just have to ignore, ETF. You just have to ignore the T.
Exactly. And I know from I've studied the flows all the time. Like it's my job, basically. And I can tell you there are the low-cost products from Vanguard and Schwab and some iShares Core. They definitely have lower turnover. They're used more by advisors for long-term building block purposes.
And institutional investors who will hold those blocks for a long time.
Yeah, long-term investors like the ETF for their low fees and their tax efficiency. So they are, if used correctly, this is why I compare ETFs to gremlins. Remember the Mogwai that was handed to that boy in the movie Gremlins? Cute little thing. He disobeyed
the
three rules.
Right? Yep.
Yeah, and one of the rules, in my opinion, is don't overtrade. If you can just withstand the temptation of not trading, you can get so much of the benefits of the ETF. And
so
he
maybe
acknowledges
it's
that.
Uppercase E, lowercase T, uppercase F.
I like that. And speaking of acronyms, Bogle's trying to introduce his own acronym for index funds. I think you might think that it's just sort of bland, so he's trying to come up with a little catchy acronym. So he calls them TIFFs.
So Jack Bogle's one-up is?
TIFFs.
TIFFs. What is TIFF?
Traditional Index Fund. So
I'd never heard that before. Had you heard that before?
I haven't. He's trying to push it. When you try to push a buzzword or not, it sometimes doesn't work. But anyway, he's trying his best, and here's him on TIFFs.
TIFs are a phrase that will have to be used. And you see these comparisons as ETFs versus other mutual funds. And other mutual funds are probably 60% index funds. We know overall that it's 43% of equity funds or index funds. But if you take the ETFs out and look at the rest of it, it's going to be 60% or 55% index fund. There's got to be a separation of those two things because they are as different as day and night. And you can argue that indeed that an ETF has far more characteristics of an actively managed fund than a traditional index fund does. I mean, just think about that.
So what he's getting at here is that, again, if you look at the holding periods for TIFs, they tend to be really long-term discipline type investors.
Because it includes stuff like mutual funds.
Yeah. And look, when people talk about like, oh, all the money's going from mutual funds to ETFs, that's not true because index mutual funds are mutual funds. Or when people say that all the money's going from active to passive, that's also not quite true because a lot of ETFs are being used very actively. So he's trying to say that a lot of the generalization of these trends is not really true because people tend to forget that index funds are mutual funds and truly passive.
In other words, there's nuance.
Yes. Another thing that I think is somewhat of a scoop in our interview, which I have never heard Bogle say, and I study a lot of his interviews, he talked about when Vanguard launched ETFs, he was not running the company, so it was a little bit out of his control that they did it. And history says, or legend says, he wasn't very happy about it. So we asked him about it, and he kind of conceded he would have done the same thing if he were running the company. And I thought that really was him moving a notch closer to sort of coming to peace with the Vanguard ETFs.
Which is maybe not surprising considering how much of a dominant player they've become.
I also think he sees that compared to some of the other ETFs, Vanguard ETFs are not traded as much. And I think he's come to more peace with that.
So here he is.
And I even, to be quite blunt about it, said, you know, I'd probably have done it too. But for me, compared to anybody else, it was a big stretch. Because looking back on my career, I made some really stupid judgments. And I think 100% of them was when I had a marketing hat on. Mm-hmm. And this is a marketing product. This is a product to bring in money. And does it serve investors well? We don't really know that.
It's a bit of a backhanded compliment.
I love the gravel in his voice when he like concedes it and then is like,
yeah. It's tough. Look, it's baby steps for him, I think. You know, Bogle to me reminds me of the father whose daughter has married a guy he does not like. And it's sort of the slow process of warming up to the son-in-law.
That's awesome.
And look,
it's like a really frustrating Thanksgiving dinner. There's some life lessons in there. So the marketing hat being a real one, which is if you're just selling, then probably it's not going to work out in your favor in the long run.
Well, the case that was made at the time Vanguard launched ETFs was that ETFs will get us into brokerage channels. And Vanguard had never really been in that business of trying to get its stuff into distribution channels. It was sort of build it and they will come.
Right.
And I think that's part of also why he didn't necessarily love it, because it was part to market Vanguard. And he's never been about being overtly like into marketing. So that was another reason. What he's saying.
In the movie of Jack Bogle's life, are you saying Kevin Costner plays Jack Bogle?
I would say Henry Fonda. He reminds me of Henry Fonda from On Golden Pond. That's the kind of vibe I get from him.
I could see the Kevin Costner one, though, right? Come on.
Okay. Well, I would be – well, look, if we did a biopic, Kevin Costner would be maybe like the middle years. The Bogle we met now is Henry Fonda.
Okay, fair.
And maybe fair. Young would be, I don't know, Shia LaBeouf or something. Like. So another thing we asked about, and we've talked about this I think on a past episode, which is in 2008, Vanguard never saw a month of outflows. Every month was inflows, even in October
And just to make that perfectly clear, that's insane.
It is insane.
In the midst of the biggest financial crisis in the past, 20 years, and money only goes in.
And remember, by October, everybody was already deathly afraid, and the market went down another 17% in that month. Vanguard took in money. Just think about that. So in these sell-offs that we've seen in the first quarter, in February, and a couple times over the past 8 years, I've studied what happens in sell-offs. Vanguard takes in money. And so they take in money when it rains and when it's sunny. And so we asked about this sort of Navy SEALs level discipline of the Vanguard investor and why they're different.
And that is, if somebody brings you to a mutual fund, a salesman and so on, he's going to want to move you when things go down. And I don't know, they say people get itchy and say, I got to get out. But I think an awful lot of brokers and advisors say, to protect themselves, you better get out now. So having that intermediary force is a force that is a disruptive force against long-term holdings.
So here again, he's saying that a lot of the reason other fund investors are not behaving well is because the intermediary needs to churn stuff to make it seem like they're doing their job, whereas the people who come directly to Vanguard are attracting already disciplined investors, first of all, and there's no intermediary.
Many of whom, you know, have gotten into investing through Bogle and his books.
What's ironic about all this is that a lot of the RIAs, the sort of new school fee-based advisors that love ETFs, they're saying their actual value add is to do behavioral coaching, and they do use Vanguard. So I do think that Vanguard does also attract intermediaries that are well-behaved and are into good behavior because, again, if you don't behave well and you pull out at the bottom and come back in on the top and all that, the cost savings of using an ETF over a mutual fund will get blown away by your behavior. So what he's talking about here is a complicated layered issue and just really fascinating.
What was another thing that you thought he said that was surprising?
Basically, how big some of these big companies can get, namely BlackRock and Vanguard. A lot of people are worried they're getting too big. They're the top two shareholders of about 86% of S&P 500 stocks.
Yeah, so you just curious go to get through any stock
any
out
stock.
There, and they're right at the top.
You see BlackRock, Vanguard, or vice versa, and that's that. And so we asked them about like how big this will get.
And there are legal limits to how big they can get.
Yeah, but they're very liberal. He thinks they should be more conservative, which is interesting. So let's hear him talk about that.
Right now, for example, the best example I can give you out of the act, no mutual fund may own more than 10% of the voting stock of any one company. What would happen if we said no mutual fund complex could own more than 10% of the voting stock of any one company? Vanguard's almost there. We're 8.5. BlackRock is, I think, just a little bit behind us. It's not quite clear, but let me call them 7.5 or 8. And I don't think State Street will ever get there, but they are at probably 4%.
So basically, if things keep up, Vanguard could be, say, 25-30% owner of all the stocks in the country.
And throw BlackRock in there.
The rule now is 10% of a fund. So let's say the Vanguard Total Market Fund, which I think owns about 3 or 4% of Apple, might be like 3%. If that hits 10%, they could just create a total market two. And then there is no limit effectively. What he's saying is, what if we make it the company, which would put Vanguard close to that 10% limit? They're 8%, BlackRock 7. And what he was also talking about was something you pressed him on a lot, which was this. In his book, he's writing about the new 40 Act, which he thinks should be.
I love this idea, right? Like that, you know, this thing that's been the bedrock of mutual funds and ETFs was also introduced in 1940. And to his point, one of the things he said is that when you go back and look at it, most of it no longer applies at all.
And a lot of it was for closed-end funds, and they are pretty much minimalized at this point. And I think a lot of people would agree with that. I think a lot of people in the industry would disagree with what he's thinking of doing, which is, one, creating these limits. The other thing I thought that he talked about was interesting is he doesn't think that any company that is publicly listed and has shareholders should also be fiduciary or vice versa, which –
it's also radical.
Unless I'm reading this wrong, it basically means that all these asset managers that trade on the exchange and have to serve shareholders would have to just stop or delist or something, because I think what he's saying is they're trying to serve two masters. You're going to make your shareholders happy with revenue, but that's sort of against making your investors happy with lower fees and whatnot and being fiduciary. He thinks those are two gods that are clashing, and I think he's calling for a new 40 Act that would eliminate that, which is, again, radical.
Radical.
Bernie Sanders type stuff.
So he also threw a few grenades. You know, we've been throwing them at the industry, and then he went to an industry group, which is called the
ICI, or the Investment Company Institute, the biggest lobbying group of asset managers. And I guess he was uninvited or wasn't invited to speak.
And this is, you know, he was a president once.
Yeah, and Vanguard's a huge member. And I think he was had some hurt feelings about that, and he talks about it here.
That's why, if you read the whole article, that the ICI doesn't want me to come down there and speak to him. Which I thought was really weird. You know, here I am, the founder of the most successful company in the history of this industry, a former governor, a former attendant, I mean former, at the general membership meeting every year. And I understand why they don't like me, but I also don't understand with State Street and BlackRock and Vanguard why it isn't much more of a index fund-oriented institute. I mean, those three firms are pretty close to 40% of the industry's assets.
And by the way, that article that he was referring to in that clip was a cover story in Barron's recently that you can check out too. But grenades, man.
Well, look, I explained to him after this a second. I was basically trying to say, I think when you think about what's happening in the industry, people can get sensitive because while he's saying index funds should be a bigger part of it, the problem is what he's saying doesn't make people a lot of money and people have families to support. It can get a little sensitive for people. I've experienced this myself on Twitter. I can step on toes when I go too pro-passive because I think people are like scared. And I think he taps into that. He's the face of what they kind of know is happening and may not want to admit or fan the flames of. They might go, okay, it's happening, but let's not quicken it because if this whole move to low or no fee funds speeds up, we could have problems in terms of people's jobs.
So this has come up a couple times about how advice fits into all of this, but he had some really interesting things to say about the future of advice.
Yeah, so we talk about ETFs are loved by advisors, especially fee-based advisors, and they love the cheap ones. And part of the reason they like it, they get to keep their own fee. So the advisor makes 1%, maybe it's around there. Robo-advisors came out at 25 basis points and sort of try to shock the system, but hasn't made that much headway. Vanguard now has an advisory service, and they'll basically have a human advice for robo-fees. A lot of people think this is going to disrupt the whole industry. So we asked them whether the advice business would needs disrupting or how that might change.
That this industry will get more and more professional and less like a business. And I think what will come along with that is more and more professional ways of paying fees. So you might be paying fees on a visit basis by the hour. I don't know what it would be. But for an advisor, it seems to me that the flat percentage fee or even the tapered percentage fee is something that's not going to sustain itself.
This is a big deal. This is basically saying that instead of your advisor getting a percent of your assets or a commission, they would get maybe an hourly rate or something more akin to a different type of business. And I've seen flashes of this on Twitter and on blogs, which is where usually things start. And so he's right in tune with that in terms of talking about the changing payment structure for advisors.
What are the ramifications of that?
Again, we're going back to possibly shrinking revenues for everybody because when you make a percentage of the assets of a portfolio and the stock market goes up, you kind of get paid just based on the market returns. And it's if you change to hourly and it's sort of indifferent on how the market does, this would definitely lower revenues. But some investors may want that. And again, advisors have roughly 20 to 25 trillion under management in the U.S. So that's bigger than the mutual fund industry. So when you talk about the advisory business, it's a potentially a whole new area that sort of might go through what the mutual fund industry is going through right now in terms of being disrupted.
You know, it dawned on me while you're describing all this. There's an internet meme, the honey badger. I think Jack Bogle is the honey badger. The honey badger don't care.
Totally. And that's why he's a great interview. Usually people who run their own company, especially ones that are retired and don't, you know, are kind of out of it in terms of not being in the game anymore, are the best interviews because they are just so blunt.
He's totally honest.
And he's also, he reminds me of my grandfather a little bit, who is deceased now, but he was World War II generation. And they have a way of talking that's just, it's folksy, but it's blunt. And I think there's a lot of that there. And he also, it's interesting, there were some other parts of the interview that we're not going to get to now, but he's very, I could tell he's very satisfied getting to watch all this play out, you know, and see this industry change at the speed it's changing right now. I think he feels like he kind of won the fight.
So if you get time with Jack Bogle, you can ask him about all the expected stuff, but then you have to throw him a couple curveballs too. So one of the ones we threw him was, what about Bitcoin? And will Vanguard ever get into that game? Here's what he said.
This is a double entendre over my dead body.
Yeah, not exactly a surprising answer there. That was exactly what I was expecting he'd say, something like that.
I don't think he has a Bitcoin wallet.
Yeah, I said, you know, is it all just nonsense to you? And he said, absolutely. So, look, I personally think that Bitcoin's resilience, when it should have died many times, gives me some faith. And I think that it's Bitcoin's really based on the financial crisis and all these banks getting bailed out. And there's real spirit there. And I do think it's got some interesting technological benefits. So I'm not as bearish as he is, but I get where he's coming from. And I also kind of get the evangelist. So I'm more in the middle, but I wasn't shocked that he was on that side of the fence.
And then we asked one of our favorite closing questions, which is, what's your favorite ETF ticker? Which he sort of stopped and looked at me, and he was like, who
no,
the?
No, then he looked at me to interpret.
I can't believe this schmuck just asked me this question.
Like, what is he asking me?
But we asked, and here's what he had to say.
And he had a great answer.
CRZY.
Too funny.
There is no ETF with that ticker. That's his way of saying.
But you get how he feels about all of this.
And I want to just sort of explore this for a second, because it's a funny answer. I mean, it's real wit there. And
you think he's thought about this before. He is sharp.
Yes, but I don't think he has. I'm just saying that just came out. And I believe he's 88 years old.
89, I think.
89. And I mean, he is sharp as
a
tack.
Hope I'm that sharp
Me
when I'm 89.
Me too, right. And look, he's still fired up. I personally, what I sometimes get from him is that the key to longevity might be just being fired up about stuff, because he definitely still is fired up. And that was a little bit of a dig on ETFs. And I just think it's
perfect.
Yeah, it really, I think, embodies what it's like to interview him.
Thanks for listening to Trillions. Until next time, you can find us on the Bloomberg Terminal, Bloomberg.com, Apple Podcasts, and wherever else you listen to podcasts. We'd love to hear from you. We're on Twitter. I'm at Joel Weber Show. He's at Eric Balchunas. Big thanks to Vanguard and Jack Bogle for this episode. Trillions is produced by Magnus Hendrickson. Francesca Levy is the head of Bloomberg Podcasts. Bye.